or lease from...
The royalty of college football is in assembly.
Oh, my gracious, yep. How about that?
We just stepped on their face with a hot-nailed vision across their nose.
Clenzo strikes with a minute and a half left.
Welcome back to the College Football Country podcast. My name is Josh Parcell. I am the founder of College Football Country and the new host of the Midday Show on WFNZ 102.5 FM in Charlotte, 610 AM. Super excited for that. And I figured, you know what? I started my radio show back up on Monday. Why not start the podcast back up this week as well? College football only a month away. No better time than now to really dig right back in to the upcoming season. It's going to be an exciting year. There's a lot to get into, and I'll have plenty of podcasts over the next month previewing the season. I'm going to do it in a different way. If you guys listened last year, you know I'm going to cover a lot of gambling, going to cover things from a different perspective. If you want to go find your traditional college football coverage, there's a lot of people who do that very well. There's a lot of different places to get that. I'm not a reporter. I'm not an insider. Look, you're coming here for my opinions. You're coming here for my unique viewpoint, I guess, on college football. And that's what I'm going to try to do. The whole goal of this podcast is to do a couple things. One, it's to be the voice of college football fans everywhere. I am a fan. I also work in the media, but I view myself as a fan first, especially when it comes to the podcast. What I want to do is just be able to speak to all of the listeners who love college football as much as I do and spend way too much time every Saturday from September through August, September through December, just devouring college football. So I'm gonna be right there with you every step of the way. And hopefully, every time you listen, you're gonna get something you're not gonna get anywhere else. So if you don't feel like that's happening, let me know. The best thing you guys can do is give me your feedback and tell me what you guys want to hear. Any guests that you would like for me to try to have on, anything and anything, this is for you guys. So make sure that you're rating, reviewing, subscribing, unsubscribing, resubscribing. You guys know the drill by now. But be involved in the show. I would love to have more engagement and feedback from you guys throughout the season. That's one of my goals, and hopefully you guys can take part in that along with me because it's going to be a good ride. So a couple things to get to today. A majority of the podcast is going to be taken up by the first edition in 2018 of hashtag QB Rank, where I'll rank my top 10 quarterbacks heading into the season. I'll give you some honorable mentions as well. Once the season starts going, I'll be ranking them based on performance week to week. But for now, I wanted to just take a look with a clean slate at who I expect to be the best quarterbacks in college football this season. I hate preseason rankings, but quarterback rankings, we'll let it slide. You know, that's fine. But before we get to the QB rank discussion, I wanted to take a few minutes and talk about what is the biggest story of the last 48 hours or so in college football, and that is North Carolina suspending 13 players for their involvement in selling of some sneakers provided them by the school. And it's a very interesting topic, right? Because North Carolina has been a school we've heard about now for what, almost 8 years. Something almost every season pops up related to the NCAA violations, probations, investigations, and suspensions ultimately. And that's what happened in this case right here. So 13 players for North Carolina suspended. Many of them, nobody really cares. It's guys who are second, third stringers, walk-ons. There are a couple key players, one of them being Malik Carney, the defensive end, Tamon Fox, another defensive end, two guys last year that were key contributors, both expected to start this season on the defensive side. And then Chaz Surratt, the quarterback, who was in the battle with Nathan Elliott all fall, all spring, about trying to win that quarterback job. They made the decision pretty easy for Larry Fedora. I thought it was my favorite part of this entire thing was 30 minutes after UNC announces that Chaz Surratt is suspended for the Cal game, Larry Fedora says, yeah, we're going to go ahead and name Nathan Elliott the starter for week one. I would have loved to have been the reporter who was at practice and could have asked Larry Fedora to his face, So, Larry, what did Nathan Elliott do to win the starting job? Just to see the reaction, because I think we all know the reason he won the job is he didn't sell shoes. But the larger point here is this, and what I want to spend time talking about right now is the hypocrisy of the NCAA is as thick as ever when it comes to this particular suspension. These players were suspended because the school provided them with shoes, which were way more valuable than I think the school may have even realized. The players then turn around and sell them on the underground market to vendors, to friends, whoever, for a couple $100 in some cases, and in a few cases more than $2,000, almost $2,500. So these guys made a lot of money off these shoes. And then the NCAA steps in and says that all of a sudden that's not allowed. But yet, at the same time, the NCAA also lets these players receive a stipend every semester that is falls under the umbrella of cost of living. Well, they don't actually tell you what you have to spend the money on when they give you that stipend. So the cap is $5,000. And once they hand you the check, you can do whatever you want with that money. So I use the analogy on Twitter, if you follow me there, where I said, well, okay, so let's say Chad Surratt, who sold his sneakers and made a few $100 off those shoes, let's say that Chad Surratt took his stipend, money he was legally given by the NCAA, cash, actual money, and decided to go play the lottery. And let's say he wins the lottery. Now, all of a sudden, he's a millionaire because he took the money that he invested from the NCAA and he won millions and more. Is that all of a sudden a violation? Is he suspended for that? No. So what the NCAA wants to tell you is they're not in the business of paying players, but they are. They're just in the business of telling you what you can earn. And it, once we finally start to take these limits off of these players, it's going to make for a much more fair existence, a much more fair system for all these kids. Because while giving them shoes, let's use this as the example, giving them shoes, Jordan sneakers, limited edition Jordan sneakers that are very valuable, yeah, the players aren't capitalizing on their likeness, but they are capitalizing on their ability. Because the NCAA didn't give any shoes to a regular student from North Carolina, but yet they're going to give those shoes to the football players. So their ability to play football is what earned them those shoes. And their ability to play football is also what earned them that cost of living stipend, because that's keeping them from going to school or going to work during school, whatever. So I find it so interesting that the NCAA basically says, all right, well, we're going to limit, you know, your cost of living stipend to $5,000 or less. And we're also going to tell you that we'll give you all sorts of cool gear, but if you get rid of it and you sell it, then that's a no-no. You can't play it anymore. It's just such a hypocritical rule in my mind. And I just don't think that it's fair to the players. This is not a UNC issue. I should have led with that, to be honest, because this is something that is absolutely going on at other schools. If you are one of the people, and I've seen this take out there from multiple people inside of college football and just around sports in general who have said that this is another black cloud over the university and just another in a long line of missteps by UNC. Nothing about this story was institutional in terms of North Carolina, the university. What this was a group of kids who acted like kids. It's kids that have more muscles than they do brains because they're 19 and 20 years old. We were all there at one point. I'll be honest, I make a full-time salary now. If you gave me a pair of Jordans that I didn't really feel like I would wear that much, and I felt like I could make $2,000 by selling them on eBay, I'm going to sell them on eBay. So this really isn't a matter of how much money I'm making already or whatever. It's basically showing the NCAA allows these schools, and these schools provide really equipment and gears in excess of what they need. And if you're giving them stuff in excess of what they need, then why not let them do whatever they want with it once you've given it to them? This is not a UNC problem. This could happen at any other school. I'm sure it does happen at most other schools. I've heard of it happening at other schools, football and other sports as well. So this is something that happens. So for you, for anybody who's going to try to make this some black mark on the University of North Carolina, it's not. What went on for the mid-90s and later under the early part of the 2000s with the academic scandal, that's a UNC problem. This is not a university problem. And on that note, I give a lot of credit to the school, the administration, and Larry Fedora for handling this in the way that they did. They actually deserve credit. They reported as soon as they found out about the fact that this could be happening. I think it was PJ Tucker's Instagram was what really first tipped them off to this back in January. They reported it within 12 hours. They investigated it fully. It took them 5-6 months, whatever it did. It happened pretty quickly. And they suspended the players and they disciplined them accordingly. So by the rules of the NCAA, UNC followed them extremely well in this case. They did a great job. They have very good reason to need to follow the rules. They're on a very thin ice as it is. But they followed protocol, and Larry Fedora did what he was supposed to do. This is not an indictment on Larry Fedora. Larry Fedora has a lot of other issues right now to sort out. And I have been faced with the question earlier this week, you know, do you think that this puts Larry Fedora on the hot seat? No, it doesn't. Now, Larry Fedora's comments at ACC Media Day, those might put him on a little bit of a hotter seat. And I think that he might have been – his head might have been in the right place, and he tried to bring up a lot of really good points. He has worked towards supporting concussion research at the University of North Carolina. He was just very inarticulate in what he said back in July. That is a much bigger issue if you're looking at the future of Larry Fedora at North Carolina than 12 or 13 players trying to make a few extra bucks selling some sneakers. So Larry Fedora, for my money, I would keep him around Chapel Hill past this season unless it just absolutely all comes crumbling down. But the injuries that piled up a year ago were so much to overcome. Almost no team outside of the top four or five teams in the country are going to be able to sustain that sort of attrition and have any sort of success. So UNC was really dealt a bad blow last year. These suspensions won't have a ton of impact on the field this year. Carney and Fox, their suspensions will be staggered. They're not even going to miss time together. Surratt, they have it. Nathan Elliott. Now, if Nathan Elliott falters and struggles, they don't really have anyone else to turn to necessarily, at least no one with experience in those first few games. But the fact of the matter is, Elliott might have won that starting job anyway. I think a lot of people wanted to see him win that job. It's not that big of a deal on the field. So for UNC, this is a story that is a big deal because it's UNC and people associate them with the academic scandal, with other sorts of violations, and people's ears and those rabbit ears are going to perk up anytime they hear UNC and the NCAA in the same sentence. But this should blow over. Larry Fedora has other issues to worry about, much bigger fish to fry, and Carolina's going to have a really hard time making a bowl game as it is. So for Larry Fedora, I think the goal should be, look, win 6-7 games, try to knock off maybe a team like Miami or Virginia Tech this season, get a signature win under your belt, show some signs of life, give the administration reason to believe in you going past this season. Now, if UNC struggles and slips to a 4 or 3-win season again, then it might be time for Fedora to go. But he's done good things with the program so far. He was dealt an incredibly bad hand when he took over, given the cloud hanging over the program left in the wake of Butch Davis and John Blake. He's been fine since then. He got them to an ACC championship game. Yes, they've taken a step back in the last couple of years, but I don't think that Larry Fedora is all of a sudden forgot how to coach football. I think UNC will be okay. And that's really my two cents on the subject. So moving on, we're going to talk now about the QB rank. This is something I did last year on the website, cfpcountry.com. Talked about it a little on the podcast from time to time, but I'm going to have plenty of different podcasts all throughout August where we'll preview the teams and the coaches and the storylines, and there's all sorts of things to talk about. But today, I wanted to take a look at the quarterbacks going into this season. They're the stars of the show. They're the guys that you're going to hear all about week in and week out. And I thought it'd be fun to just rank who I think are the 10 best college quarterbacks heading into the season. Now, this is not a mock draft. I'm not Mel Kiper. I'm not projecting who I think is going to be the best NFL players. All I'm doing is predicting who I think are going to be the 10 best college quarterbacks based on individual production and team success this year. There really was no formula or scientific or mathematical piece to this. It was more just, these are the guys that I like. These are the guys that I think are in a really good position to succeed and thrive. And when putting together this list, I realized there's a lot of great quarterbacks out there. I mean, there are some guys that did not make the cut for the top 10 who I think could be Heisman contenders. I mean, that's how deep this quarterback class is at the college level. Now, when we start projecting who's going to be a successful NFL quarterback, I don't see an Andrew Luck in this class. I don't see a Jameis Winston in this group right now. I don't see a guy who's just a slam dunk home run franchise quarterback in a year when we start coming into the draft. But for what this is, for college football fans, I think we're in for a treat. I think there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of different styles, which always makes, you know, the sport so great. We have some guys who are longtime veterans, guys who have been around for 3, even 4 years, guys who have been at multiple schools. We also have brand new faces. We have guys who are freshmen, who are freshmen or sophomores entering their first year as starters. There's just so many different backgrounds for these guys. I think it's going to be a super exciting year. And like I said, some of the guys who didn't even make this list could end up in New York for the Heisman in December. So I'll first start out with my honorable mentions, the five guys who I started out as nominees for this list, but when I really started ranking them 1 through 15, these were the guys who didn't make the cut. In no particular order, Justin Herbert from Oregon, Jake Browning at Washington, Nick Fitzgerald at Mississippi State, Trevor Lawrence from Clemson, who I do think is going to win that job, and Justice Hansen from Arkansas State, the one guy whose name you probably don't know, but put up absolutely ridiculous stats last season for Blake Anderson and that Arkansas State team. He's going to actually have a great year. It's just we're never going to hear his name. He plays in the Sun Belt at Arkansas State. But those are five names that none of those would surprise me if they had, I mean, absolutely outstanding years. I might be surprised if Justice Hansen made it to New York for the Heisman, but if you told me Trevor Lawrence took Clemson in an undefeated season and was one of the best players in college football, wouldn't surprise me. But I have him outside the top 10 right now. Nick Fitzgerald, a guy at Mississippi State who could be an absolute game changer, could be a force in the SEC. He's coming off of an absolutely gruesome leg injury, and that alone keeps him off of the top 10 list. I'm uncertain of what kind of Nick Fitzgerald we're going to see this season. Is he 100% healthy? If he is, I think Fitzgerald could easily shoot way higher up this list, especially playing for Joe Moorhead, who just came over from Penn State as the offensive coordinator. He's now the head coach in Starkville. Justin Herbert at Oregon, another guy who could put up great numbers. He lost a lot around him, and he's dealing with a new head coach in Mario Cristobal, who, unlike Joe Moorhead, Moorhead comes in with a really, really serious pedigree as an offensive wizard. I have a few more questions about the type of system that Cristobal is going to introduce, how Herbert will fit into that. From an NFL perspective, he is number one on Mel Kiper's big board right now, and he's not even in my top 10 of college quarterbacks. That tells you something about how good I think the quarterbacks are ahead of him, but Herbert could, in fact, be the best pro prospect. I just have questions about what he is going to do at Oregon this season. I think the Ducks could be dangerous. I also think that it's more likely Oregon ends up as a 8-4 type of team, and if that's the case, we're not really going to hear a lot of Herbert's name throughout the season. He just won't be in the headlines as much as some of the guys ahead of him. Jake Browning is a guy who will be in the headlines. Washington has a huge opening game against Auburn. They're a preseason top 5 team. They're the best team in the Pac-12. Browning's been around for 3 years. My question for Jake Browning is, when are you going to show up in a big game? Because Browning has put together a lot of great numbers. He just hasn't done it on the biggest stage. I mean, we point back to 2 years ago against Alabama when he severely struggled, but he's also struggled in games against Stanford in recent memory. Other big games as well. USC, he struggled a couple years ago. So we need to see Jake Browning perform on the biggest stage before I could elevate him into a category equal to some of the guys ahead of him on this list. But he did almost make the cut. Jake Browning, though, falling into my honorable mentions outside of the top 10. So now we'll go into the top 10. And at number 10, and I'll include their Heisman odds as well in this because I want to, and I think you should care about it as well, is Ryan Finley. Ryan Finley from NC State. He is 100-1 to win the Heisman. He has the worst odds of anybody in my top 10 to win the Heisman at 100-1. There could be some value in that pick. Last season, Ryan Finley threw for over 3,500 yards, 17 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, completed 65% of his passes. Now, he has the chance to lead the Wolfpack to a special year. He's got Stephen Lewis and Kelvin Harmon back, who both combine over 100 yards and 100 receptions and 1,500 yards between them. There's serious questions in the running game. I think that actually plays to Finley's favor. Reggie Gillespie played 2017, banged up, ran for just over 500 yards as kind of the rotational back behind Nyheim Hines. Nyheim Hines is gone, and Matthew Days left 2 years ago. Those are back-to-back 1,000-yard rushers that are now into the NFL. It's really on Ryan Finley's shoulders at this point to carry NC State, and they've got a heck of an opportunity in the Atlantic Division to make some noise. They're going to have the great offense. Finley's going to put up a lot of points. I think they're going to be arguably the highest-scoring offense in the ACC. They'll be battling that out with Clemson. But the schedule sets up for Ryan Finley to put his name on the map. He gets West Virginia in week 3. That's a showdown against another guy who's going to be on this list a little bit later in Will Grier. And that's middle of September. He gets a couple weeks early on against JMU and Georgia State just to kind of warm up. He'll be ready to roll when the Mountaineers come in to Raleigh for that game in week 3. He then gets Marshall and Virginia a little bit later, BC. That could be a decent game. But then the road game against Clemson in the middle of October. So he gets that marquee game, middle of the season. I think that's a great opportunity for NC State to pull off an upset. I'll talk more about that in a podcast in a few weeks. But don't be surprised if Ryan Finley and the Wolfpack are undefeated going into that game against Clemson on October 20th. That would put them at 7-0, or actually 6-0, coming off a bye week going into Death Valley. Now, Clemson has lost Clemson has lost as 3 touchdown favorites in each of the last 2 seasons. Now, they'll be less than a 3 touchdown favorite at home against NC State unless, I mean, everything falls apart for the Wolfpack in September. But that's a chance for an upset right there. That's a popular upset pick. I don't think I'm going out on a huge limb by saying that the Wolfpack are going to be a trap game for Clemson, but I think Ryan Finley has a chance to put his name on the map in Death Valley on October 20th. And then get a chance to take on Florida State a little bit later and get the ball rolling for a great year. I don't think Ryan Finley is going to win the Heisman, but I think he's going to be a guy who puts up ridiculous stats. I think he's a first-team All-ACC quarterback. It's a down year for quarterbacks in the conference, and Ryan Finley, I think, is the cream of the crop in the ACC. So I really look forward to that Week 3 game. That's one of the most underrated non-conference matchups of the season against West Virginia. Nobody's really talking about that one. It's a few weeks into the season. It's between – West Virginia's got high hopes, but – I mean, these are not blue bloods, let's be honest, in West Virginia and NC State, but that game could actually turn out to be one of the games of the year. 2 great offenses, 2 very suspect defenses. The over-under for that game is probably going to touch 100. I think that it's going to be just a blast to see that game. So Ryan Finley comes in at number 10. Number 9 is Mackenzie Milton. Now, you probably know who Mackenzie Milton is. You should. He was the quarterback at UCF last year and led the Golden Knights that undefeated season. And he's back again this year for another run in 2018. Now, a lot of things have changed for Milton now. He's got a new head coach. Scott Frost has gone to Nebraska. And Josh Heupel takes over as the coordinator, as not only the offensive coordinator, but as the head coach as well. I think that Josh Heupel is going to step right in and Milton's going to pick up where he left off. In 2017, Milton threw for over 4,000 yards, 37 touchdowns, only 9 interceptions, ran for 613 yards and 8 scores. I mean, this is one of the more dynamic players in the country. And Drew Locke, just a year ago, put up very similar numbers in the passing game to what Milton did, over 4,000 yards, a ton of touchdowns. Not the runner that Mackenzie Milton is. Josh Heupel led Locke and kind of mentored Locke for the last couple of years at Missouri. I think he's going to be able to do similar things with Milton. I think Milton's going to have a fantastic year. The schedule is very manageable for UCF. They play UNC early in the season, and then beyond that, it's just a few games in the American Conference. We're going to see what they are capable of. I think this is another 11 or 12 win season. They return 6 starters. They return Adrian Killens at running back. They've got Dredrick Snelson coming back at receiver, and Gabriel Davis. So they return a lot of guys on offense. There's a lot of production coming back. Milton was at the center of that. UCF scored 48 points a game last season. They averaged 7.5 yards per play. That's second in the country. Yards per play is a number. It's nerdy, but I love it. It's a number that really, if you're trying to start to look at lines and spreads and things of that nature, looking at teams' yards per play is the best way, in my mind, one of the best ways to determine just how efficient teams are, whether it's on offense or defense. 7.5 yards a play last year with Milton under center. I think they're going to pick up right where they left off. I think UCF has a huge year. Milton could be a guy who ends up in New York. He's 40-1 to win the Heisman right now. You think back to some other guys from outside the Power Five who made runs towards the Heisman in the last decade or so. Kellen Moore comes to mind. Jordan Lynch is a great comparison as a guy who did it with both his arms and his leg, or both his arm and his legs. Milton falls into that same type of mold. I think he's going to have a great year. I think that if UCF runs the table, there's an outside chance that Milton ends up in New York. His ceiling is as a finalist. I don't think he wins it by any stretch. There isn't enough on the schedule that's going to really grip, I think, the national media enough to vote for him over some of the other guys who are going to be on this list, and maybe somebody we're even not talking about, but from the Power Five. But Milton could have a heck of a year, and he falls at number 9 on my list. Number 8, this is a guy who I think most people will probably have a little bit higher, is Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama. Now, he's got to win the starting job. That's maybe the biggest storyline of all of August in the entire country, is whether Tagovailoa or Jalen Hurts win that starting job for Alabama. But the last time we saw Tua, he led Alabama to the national title. He comes in, I don't need to tell you the story, he picks up in the second half, replaces Jalen Hurts, and wins the championship for the Crimson Tide. But this kid might be the most overhyped player we've seen in a long time in college football. Now, we overhype kids all the time. It's just part of the business. But this kid is getting a lot of hype with very minimal production to back it up. I understand what he did on a big stage in the national championship. That told me a few things. That told me he's not afraid of big moments. That told me that he is a fearless leader. And those are two qualities that are absolutely quintessential to winning a championship at quarterback in college football. But what we don't know yet is how he handles week-to-week preparation, his decision-making in close games. If you go back to that Georgia game, okay, yes, he threw the game-winning touchdown, but the play before, the very play before, he takes a 15-yard sack on first and 10 in overtime. One of the cardinal sins of quarterbacking in college is taking a sack in overtime, especially on first and 10. He almost knocked Alabama totally out of field goal range, or out of scoring range, I should say, and it was only on a miraculous play on the very next play that he turned the narrative around and became America's sweetheart from that point on. So Tua, I think, is a tremendous talent. I saw him up close and personal. Many of the guys on this list I saw take part in the Elite 11 several years ago as they were coming out of high school. Tua was as good as any quarterback that I saw at those camps. Just an athletic freak, extremely quick, reminded me of Johnny Manziel in the way that he's a little undersized, but just an awesome personality, a natural-born leader. Guys really love being around him. And, I mean, just a heck of a talent. I mean, an incredible arm. He is easily the most dynamic quarterback that Nick Saban has had at Alabama. You go down the list of guys that have played quarterback for him, whether it's A.J. McCarron or Greg McElroy or Blake Sims or even Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts, nowhere near the threat as a passer that Tua has become. And Tua is every bit the runner that Jalen is. I don't think there's any question that Tua deserves to win this job. Jalen probably made it Nick Saban's decision even easier with the comments that he made this week. But I think that Tua, regardless of those comments, deserves to be the starting quarterback. He's incredibly talented. I just think that by giving him 7-1 odds to win the Heisman, he is the betting favorite right now to win the Heisman, is way too high of a bar for Tua to try to reach. And if we think about the Heisman, Tua is an absolutely terrible bet for that award right now, because the Heisman is as much about living up to and exceeding expectations as it is about being the best player in college football. It's only been a handful of times, really, in the last 15 years where the Heisman has gone to a player who entering the season was among the favorites to win. It's happened a couple more times in recent years, so the narrative may be starting to change a little bit. Baker Mayfield was one of the big-time favorites a year ago. Marcus Mariota was the favorite going into 2014. Before that, it really was Tim Tebow in 2007, and not many in between have been, not even household names, just guys that we really expected to be in the mix. I mean, Lamar Jackson was a guy who came out of nowhere. Derrick Henry kind of popped up. He was a running back that's a little bit different. But just the quarterbacks that win it oftentimes, I don't say come out of obscurity, but are guys that aren't necessarily our top choice when the season is upon us in August. So Tua is a guy I think is going to have a heck of a year, but he's my number eight guy in this list. I don't think he's going to end up being one of the biggest superstars in college football this season. Number seven, Dwayne Haskins. Now, Dwayne Haskins is 11-1. He's the new quarterback at Ohio State. I actually was prepared to put Haskins a little bit higher on this list, and that's probably a bit of a bold statement considering that he has yet to start a college game. He did play last year against Michigan. He was 6-for-7 in that game, 94 yards, had a couple of nice runs in that game as well. Looked very impressive in limited action, taking over for Barrett, JT Barrett, in that win. But look, Dwayne Haskins is was one of the most highly touted players in the country at a high school. He actually originally was committed to Maryland, which could you imagine him playing at Maryland right now, a guy of his talent. But he is at Ohio State, and the thing that jumped out to me when I watched him the first time was he has shades of Jameis Winston in his game. He's got the same similar type of build. He's a big-bodied quarterback. He's got an absolutely naturally gifted cannon arm. And that is very similar to the same type of tools that physically Jameis Winston brought to the table. Now, what Jameis was able to do at Florida State was lead a team and really rally a team around him. He's one of the most charismatic guys. He's a tremendous leader in the locker room at Florida State. He had his issues away from the field, and we don't need to get into that. But the leadership that Jameis Winston brought to that Florida State team and his ability to get his teammates to rally around him in big games – that remains to be seen for Dwayne Haskins, and that's the big question mark, is what's he going to do, how is he going to handle adversity when he's pretty much walking into a situation where he's got a lot of veterans around him, a lot of guys that have been through some battles, and that can play to his benefit, all right? He's got a lot of talent, and that's going to make him look really good, but at the same time, how does he handle being kind of that young guy that's dealing with veterans like Paris Campbell at receiver? And Austin Mack and Terry McLaurin, like guys who have been around for quite a while. J.K. Dobbins is going to be a tremendous asset for him in the backfield. I think that takes away from his chances at winning the Heisman because Dobbins is going to take a lot of carries. He's going to put up highlight reel plays. I don't think Haskins is really, to be honest, any threat to win the Heisman this year. But I think he could absolutely lead Ohio State to the playoff. Once we know more about this Urban Meyer situation, how that gets kind of sorted out, once the dust settles there, then we'll know more about what this Ohio State team is going to be able to do this season. If that cloud continues to hang over them, and even if Urban Meyer returns, but there's just enough distractions to maybe keep the Buckeyes from reaching their full potential, then that could really affect Dwayne Haskins. But for now, I mean, this is a guy I think that given what he has around him and the coaching staff in place, I mean, Haskins is going to have a great year. I would not put a single penny of my money on him to win the Heisman at 11-1, but that doesn't mean that I don't think he's going to be great. Number six, and this is one that I almost also put higher, is Kyler Murray. Now, another unknown. This is a guy who started his career at Texas A&M. He's probably known more at this point for being a baseball player who makes almost as much money as his head coach than he is known for playing football. We saw him at A&M a couple years ago. He kind of battled it out with Kyle Allen. They went back and forth in his only year in College Station. It didn't work out. And now he resurfaces at Oklahoma, and he takes over for Baker Mayfield, another guy who transferred into Norman and had a lot of success. I actually think that Kyler Murray could be an improvement over Baker Mayfield. Athletically, from a straight-up skill standpoint, Murray's got more physical tools than Baker has. Now, Baker's intangibles were absolutely unparalleled. And that's what carried him to a Heisman. And that's what elevated Oklahoma to a couple playoff runs in the last 3 years when Baker was the starter. Kyler Murray's got all the physical traits. My question is, how is he as a leader? Similar to Dwayne Haskins. What can he do? What is his demeanor like in the fourth quarter of a tight game? When they're down 14 in the second quarter against Texas? Whatever it might be, how does Murray respond? I personally think Murray is a gamer. I think he's an absolute dynamite type player. He's another one who has a little Manziel in his game, not to keep going back to that same reference, but he's just a smaller guy. He's a diminutive guy. He's not your traditional quarterback, but he makes so many plays with his feet. He's faster than Manziel. I mean, he's got running back receiver type speed, and he's got a naturally gifted arm. He's the type of guy who can make plays that are going to be highlight reel, improvised type plays. He's not going to drop back. He's not going to take the snap from the gun and just 1-2-3 rhythm throw. He's going to move around. He's going to do some things that are going to really catch your attention. I think Kyler Murray is going to be spectacular this season. I think he might be the best value bet to win the Heisman. I actually think Oklahoma is going to be better this year than they were last year. I think they're going to be a playoff team. I think that given the story of Kyler Murray being a baseball player now and being drafted in the first round by the A's, that's the type of story that the national media is going to fall in love with. And when you start thinking about the Heisman Trophy, kind of a popularity contest sometimes. It's what are those other stories that we can hook ourselves onto, that we can latch onto and ride out, and that ultimately ends up a lot of times in helping guys win the Heisman. I think that plays to Murray's advantage. If Oklahoma gets off to a hot start, wins some games early, Murray starts to catch people's attentions with some of those plays. You'll see highlights pop up on Twitter from time to time. I think all of a sudden he's going to very quickly, ingratiate himself with the fans. He's got Florida Atlantic in week one. That you may laugh at that game when hearing it, but that game is a real one. Okay, Lane Kiffin's got a good team at Florida Atlantic. Oklahoma will certainly be favored, probably by closer to 2 or 3 touchdowns. But FAU could absolutely give them a little bit of a challenge. That's at least an opportunity for Murray to get off the ground in a game that people will be watching. UCLA the next week against Chip Kelly. I mean, the Bruins are going to be rebuilding, but it's UCLA. I mean, for Oklahoma to take on UCLA in week two, another chance for a game that's going to be nationally televised, a lot of eyeballs in front of it. Those are two games right out of the gate that it's kind of the perfect storm for Kyler Murray because it's winnable. They're both winnable, but they're both going to be pretty big stages. So he has a really good chance to get off to a 2-0 start and do it in front of a lot of people. They get Iowa State in week 3, Army week 4, and then Baylor and then Texas. So they really have a chance to be 5-0 and have given Murray a lot of exposure before that showdown against Texas on the first weekend of October in Dallas. Look, I think Kyler Murray has a really good chance. A really good chance with all of the storylines surrounding him. This is his only year in college. He's going to move on to play in the NFL or play in the MLB once this is over. I think Kyler Murray could win the Heisman. I really do. He's the first person on this list who I genuinely think has a very good chance. I mean, there's other guys below him that, I mean, it wouldn't shock me, but I think Kyler Murray is on the short list of candidates in my mind to win the Heisman Trophy. And at 22-1, I like those odds. Now we move into the top five, and number five is Drew Lock at Missouri. Drew Lock, I mentioned him earlier. He lost his offensive coordinator, Josh Heupel. Derek Dooley now takes over for Heupel, and we'll see what kind of impact that has. But Lock threw for almost 4,000 yards last year, 44 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, one of the best true passers in this group, along with Justin Herbert, I think one of the best pro prospects. From a college standpoint, I think he's going to be another guy similar to Ryan Finley, who we talked about at NC State, that puts up terrific numbers. His numbers are going to look outstanding. The question is, how many games does Missouri win? Now, Missouri doesn't have all that difficult schedule, all things considered, in the SEC outside of those two huge matchups. They take on Georgia and they take on Alabama. Those are two of the toughest games you could possibly play. If Missouri goes 1-1 in those games, and that is a tremendous if. They'll be double-digit underdogs, probably in both. But if they can win one of those games and pull off what would be one of the upsets of the year, the rest of the schedule sets up for Drew Lock to do some special things. He's another one at 45-1. I think there's some value in throwing down a little bit of Heisman coinage on Drew Lock, just based on his chances of knocking off either Georgia or Alabama. I don't even think he needs to win both. I think it would be better for him to beat Alabama. One, that's on the road, and two, that's the second of those two games. They take on Georgia September 22nd. They take on Alabama early October on the 13th. Once they get past that, though, they take on Memphis, Kentucky, at Florida, Vanderbilt, at Tennessee, Arkansas. They'll be favored in every single one of those games. Even on the road against Florida, I could see Missouri being favored. That's the only one that might be a toss-up. But outside of that, Missouri has a very favorable schedule down the stretch. Remember, this is a team last year that started 1-5 and finished 6-1. They scored over 40 points in every regular season game during that win streak to end the year. They then lost to Texas in the bowl game, but I think Drew Locke has a lot of potential to have a great year. I would not be shocked if he's in New York for the Heisman. I think at 45-1, there's value. If you were just asking me straight up for who do I think are the guys that are going to end up in New York for the Heisman, he wouldn't crack my top three or four. But there's a chance laid out for him if he can steal one of those upsets against one of the top two contenders in the SEC. Things could go well for Locke this season. Number four is Khalil Tate. Now, he is by far the worst passer among this group, but he's also by far the best runner. I mean, he's a guy who took over halfway through last season, ran for over 300 yards in his first start. I mean, one of the best rushing quarterbacks we've seen in college football, quite honestly, ever. And now he gets a full year to be the starting quarterback at Arizona. And he's got a new head coach, Kevin Sumlin. To be honest, I think Khalil Tate is a huge reason why Kevin Sumlin took this job in the first place. Okay, Sumlin could have sat out a year, could have gone and done the TV thing, and could have had his pick of any open job he wanted next season. But he wanted to get right back in the game at Arizona, and he's got a quarterback who fits Sumlin's style to a T. You think about the guys that Sumlin has won with in the past. Everybody brings up Johnny Manziel. I didn't realize we were going to bring up Johnny Manziel three times in this podcast, but here we are. Khalil Tate can be a game-changing type force like what Manziel did for Sumlin at A&M. It's in his first year as the head coach, and Tate can be a game changer. I mean, that's the type of ability that he has. Now, the question for Arizona is how much help does he have around him? Because he's not going to be able to win all of these games by himself. The Pac-12 is going to be pretty good. The South is going to be pretty good. And if you look at what Arizona has surrounding Khalil Tate, it does include eight returning starters. I mean, they've got guys, four receivers returning, their top four receivers returning. They do lose the running back from last season, but J.J. Taylor takes over at that position. I think Arizona's offense is going to be very good. Defensively, they return nine starters. I mean, this is a team that's probably going to be just on the outside of the top 25 looking in when the year begins. But by the time they get to September 29th, they should be 4-0. They take on BYU at home. They go to Houston. That's not an easy game, but one they should win. Southern Utah week three, Oregon State week four. That should be 4-0. They then welcome USC into Tucson on September 29th. That should be a primetime late night game. That's Khalil Tate's first chance this season to make a statement that gets him on the map to contend for the Heisman Trophy. Last year, he ran for 20 yards or more on an average of 3.3 times a game. So over three times a game, he was breaking a 20-yard run. That is absolutely ridiculous. He had the second most of any team in the FBS, and he did it as a player. Only Army had averaged more big runs per game than Khalil Tate did by himself, and he plays quarterback. So this guy's going to be a human highlight reel. I think he's going to be more of an internet sensation than a real Heisman contender, just because I think that Arizona is going to lose a couple games down the line, even if they were to knock off USC in week five. This smells like a team that we kind of overrate early in the season. Maybe they pick up that win, and then all of a sudden they come crashing back to reality in the second half of their schedule. Now, they do avoid Washington. That's huge for them. They get Oregon late in October. That would be a nice opportunity for Tate as well. But I don't see a lot of chances for Tate down the stretch to make statements. I more so see chances for him in Arizona to lose games that would knock Tate out of the running for the Heisman. So I think he's going to be great. But at 15-1, I wouldn't put my money on Khalil Tate winning the Heisman Trophy or even making it to New York. So now we hit the top three. Trey Sorley is number three at Penn State. Now, he's also 15-1 to win the Heisman. And last year, he ran for 3,500 yards, 28 touchdowns with 10 interceptions. He's also a threat on the ground. And it's his show now. Saquon Barkley is gone. He's taking carries for the Giants. McSorley is going to be the one in control of that offense at Penn State. And I'm very high on his chances to win the Heisman. He's got 8 starters back on offense, several marquee games, and the games are spaced out perfectly. Okay, because he gets Ohio State and Michigan State in late September, then a bye before that Michigan State game mid-October. So there's plenty of time here for McSorley to not only make statements on a national stage, but do it over the course of more than a month. He then gets Wisconsin in November. So some of these guys, they play their big game in September, and we may not hear about them for quite a while. McSorley's got 3 huge games, all spaced out about 2 or 3 weeks apart. He's going to stay in the national spotlight as long as Penn State keeps winning. There's a really good chance that McSorley ends up contending for the Heisman. I think he's going to be great regardless. I don't know that he's a overwhelmingly great NFL prospect. He's not the most, I guess, prototypical NFL guy is an easy way to put it. But, you know, he's not the biggest. He doesn't have the strongest arm. But he is an accurate passer. He throws well on the run. He's just your great college quarterback. He can improvise whenever he needs to. He does well in run pass option situations. He's going to have good running backs. He won't have Saquon Barkley, but Miles Sanders will be great. Ricky Slade, the freshman, will be great for them. They'll be impact players. McSorley is going to be the one that carries this team. I think that the Penn State will go as far as McSorley takes them, and there's a chance that Penn State runs the table, wins the Big Ten East. If that happens, McSorley is going to be one of the very, very few true contenders to win the Heisman Trophy. At 15-1, that's a short price. I don't know that I would lay much on him right now in the preseason, but I do think that McSorley will be there at season's end if Penn State has the type of season they expect. Top two, number two, Jarrett Stidham. Jarrett Stidham at Auburn is a guy I was very close to putting him number one, and quite honestly, maybe I should have. But at 25-1 to win the Heisman, there's some decent odds here for Stidham. I think Stidham's going to have a terrific season. There's no question about that. Last year ran for threw for almost 3,200 yards, 18 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, ran for 4 more scores. This is the first time in 4 years that Gus Malzahn has had continuity at the quarterback position at Auburn. Nick Marshall started back-to-back seasons, struggled a little bit more in his second year after taking them to the national title. And then there was the Jeremy Johnson experiment. There was the Sean White kind of deal. Now Jarrett Stidham is the man for the second year in a row. That's a good thing for Auburn. Auburn has a very difficult schedule at the end, just like they did a year ago. They get Georgia and then Alabama in 2 of their last 3 games. What happened to Auburn last season is they fell asleep at the wheel against LSU, ultimately cost them a chance, in my mind, to maybe even play for the college football playoff. And then they get into those late game, home game scenarios against Georgia, and then they get the win against Alabama. And I guess the Georgia game was rather on the road, but the Alabama game was at home. That was Jarrett Stidham's coming out party. They just ran out of gas by the time they got to Atlanta for the SEC championship against Georgia. And that could happen again this season. Now, the difference for Auburn this year and why I think Jarrett Stidham is going to have an even bigger season is more responsibility is going to be on his shoulders than anyone else. Last year, Kerryon Johnson really became the workhorse, and his body literally broke down by the end of that Georgia game. Jarrett Stidham will be able to give the offense a more diversified look, which is a really, really important thing for Auburn, especially as the season starts to wear on. You're going to see the ball in more players' hands. You got guys like Nate Craig Myers at receiver, who's an absolute freak. Ryan Davis had 84 catches a year ago at receiver. So they've got just a lot more of a diversified look, like I said, that's going to give, I think, Auburn a really, really good chance to contend in the SEC West. I just worry about them running out of gas again like they did a year ago. I think they're better equipped this year to avoid that trap. But let's face it, do you really expect Auburn to go in and win both games against Georgia and Alabama for the second year in a row? I highly doubt it. So Stidham's going to have a great season. He's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in college football. A lot's going to hinge on what happens in those last few weeks. He does get Washington early on in the season opener. Jake Browning, a guy who almost made this list. Great opportunity for Stidham to get right out of the gate and take an early lead in the Heisman voting, the early returns, and that can be important. We sometimes are quick to hand out the Heisman too early, But I think Jarrett Stidham is a great contender for September Heisman. If Auburn does beat Washington, which I expect him to do, then all of a sudden Auburn is off to a hot start. Jarrett Stidham is the hot name. How much momentum can he build off of that week one game and then taking on LSU in week three? So there's some chances for Stidham early to grab hold of the national spotlight and maybe never let go, at least until they take on Georgia and Alabama at the end. So my final guy, my number one guy, is Will Grier. So Will Grier, I mentioned him earlier, and he is, for my money, the best quarterback in college football this season. He's 15-1 to win the Heisman. Those are the same odds as Trace McSorley and the same odds as Khalil Tate and worse odds than Tua Tagovailoa. So the problem with Will Grier, if we want to start there, is his defense is going to struggle. The Big 12 is a complete toss-up outside of Oklahoma, and you could even throw the Sooners in there if you wanted. There's a lot of really good teams in the Big 12. No matter who you are, it's going to be very hard to win 11 or 12 games in the Big 12. West Virginia's got a great team. They've got a ton of weapons. They've got David Sills, Gary Jennings. That might be the best wide receiver duo in college football. Last year, those two guys combined for over 2,000 yards receiving, 19 touchdowns. Will Grier has weapons, okay? I just am concerned that West Virginia might lose a game or two that keeps him from winning the Heisman. He's going to put up outstanding stats. He's going to have over 4,000 yards. He's going to have 40 touchdowns. Last year, he had 3,500 yards, 34 scores, 320 yards a game. The voters are not afraid to give the Big 12 or to give the Heisman to a Big 12 quarterback. They did it just a year ago. Will Grier will be in the mix. If you look at the schedule for West Virginia, there are opportunities early in the season for them to make a little bit of noise. We know that early on they have that game in week three against NC State. They also take on Tennessee in Charlotte on September 1st, opening day. That's a 3:30 kickoff. I will be there for that game. College Football Country will be at that game. That's a great chance to see my number one quarterback. Will Grier, ever since he started his career at Florida, I've been a big believer in this guy. People very easily forget that at Florida, Will Grier had the Gators on a path to not only make the SEC championship game, but compete toe-to-toe with Alabama 3 years ago. Instead, he is suspended, and the season falls apart for Florida, and Will Grier was out of sight, out of mind for the better part of 2 years. He comes back at West Virginia last season, puts together a nice season, and now all of a sudden, entering 2018, the hype is back again, and people are coming back around on Will Grier as one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I thought Will Grier was a Dark Horse Heisman candidate a year ago. Now he's right back in the mix. He's not the favorite, but according to Vegas at least. But in my mind, he's one of the top quarterbacks in the country. At 15-1, I would dabble in that a little bit. The schedule is not horrible until you get into November. That Tennessee game should be a win. I mean, Tennessee turning over a new leaf with Jeremy Pruitt. There's some talent there for the Vols. But West Virginia, I don't see how they lose that one. NC State on the road is a super tricky one. That game is going to be a shootout like I talked about earlier. If they get past NC State, they play Kansas State. That should be a win. Texas Tech should be a win, even on the road. Kansas is a win. Iowa State, that's a tricky one on the road against Matt Campbell and a good Iowa State team. But again, should be a win. Baylor, they'll be favored. They'll be favored in every game except for the road trip to NC State. From September through October, West Virginia is going to be in the top 15, probably even in the top 10. I could see the Mountaineers being a top 10 team entering that November 3rd showdown at Texas. But when you talk about November, they go to Texas, they get TCU at home, at Oklahoma State, Oklahoma at home on a Friday, and then, if things go well, another game the next week in the Big 12 championship game. So that November gauntlet is probably where everything catches up to the Mountaineers. We've seen it happen before with Dana Holgorsen where they get off to a hot start and then things fall apart. I think that's where it catches up to them. But I would love to see Will Grier end his career on a high note. The guy's been a terrific player in college football. I want to try to start to call him Davey Rocket, the West Virginia quarterback. We'll see if that can stick. But he's going to get off to a great start. His biggest question mark is how does he navigate that November schedule once he gets past Tennessee and NC State in September? So there you have it. That's the top 10. It's over. the top 10 quarterbacks, if you want to recap really quickly, number 10 was Ryan Finley, number 9, Mackenzie Milton, number 8, Tua Tagovailoa, number 7, Dwayne Haskins, number 6, Kyler Murray, 5 was Drew Locke, 4 was Khalil Tate, 3, Trace McSorley, number 2, Jarrett Stidham, and number 1 was Will Greer. It's going to be an outstanding year of college football. I'll be back starting early next week. I'm going to be doing over-unders conference by conference. So you're going to get your over-under podcasts other places. Some guys do great jobs with that. We're going to go conference by conference. I'm going to do over-unders with a different writer, personality, broadcaster, whatever, from each league. I know for a fact right now we've got Kevin McGuire locked in to do the Big Ten. Peter Burns is going to join me to do the SEC. Rossi Three Stacks will be back to do the ACC, and he'll weigh in on the North Carolina stuff, I'm sure, as well. And we'll also touch on the Big 12 and Pac-12 as well later, still nailing down those guests as we speak. But be on the lookout next week for more podcasts doing over-unders on each team. That'll give you a nice little preview of the season as we go through the major conferences. And also, later this week, stick around because I'll be doing my Coach Rank podcast. QB Rank was today. Coach Rank will be next. I'll rank the top 10 coaches in college football. I'm sure you guys will agree with every single pick. So hope you enjoyed the podcast. So glad to be back. This is going to be a really fun year. Give me your thoughts. Give me your feedback. Give me your ranking. Who do you think should be higher, lower? Who got left off the list that deserves to be on here? There's a ton of great talent out there this season, and it's going to make for a heck of a year. Can't wait to get started. Thanks again for listening. Stay tuned for Friday's episode where we rank the coaches. Until then, enjoy your week.